gifts of our listeners, let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this next hour, they're going to be those of Deanna Spingola. And Deanna actually writes regularly for newswithviews.com, and she's written some amazing and a really very, very exciting series there. Good evening, Deanna. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you, Dr. Stan?
I'm doing just great. And I appreciate so much your being with us here and just before the holiday season, but I think these subjects are so very important.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, now, which one of the articles should we talk about? Do you want to talk about the One World Order, or did you have, or you want to talk about your latest article?
How about the latest one, the Power Elite Playbook, Bankers and Their Bombers?
All right. I think it's so vitally important for people to understand there really is a power elite. I mean, the communists have talked about them for years, but just because the communists have talked about them doesn't mean that they're not real. In fact, those of you who listen to our programs regularly will realize that the communist movement was set up as a foil. It was financed by the power elite from the very inception back in 1918 and has always been there to mislead us, so we would not really see who it is who's really pulling the strings behind the scenes and moving us away from freedom towards fascism. So you pick the story up there, Deanna.
Okay, I really, really love history. And it seems that no matter what I become involved with, it always leads back to war.
Right.
And I think that war is one of the biggest tactics that the power elite use for population management. And because when we are engaged in war somewhere else, we're always losing freedoms here at home.
I think that is really so true. Basically, we send our boys overseas supposedly to fight for freedom, and then the power elite takes away our freedom here at home. But we're so distracted by the tragedy and the death and the mutilation and the horror of war, we don't see what's happening here.
Right, and they promise that, oh, we're going to be more secure, and it's just like with Homeland Security now. I mean, that's like the Gestapo.
I know.
And they're supposedly protecting our homeland. We have FEMA. We have all kinds of agencies, and yet they can't seem to protect us from the supposed events of 9/11.
Right.
Which was just really a guise to allow us to go into Iraq.
And, of course, the thing is, if there really was a terrorist threat, they would have sealed our southern border, which they haven't. There'd be air marshals on every one of our planes. I said every airline pilot would be armed to protect the people on board. I mean, we would see all sorts of attacks here. I mean, certainly if they can get all these people willing to kill themselves, you know, in Israel and in Iraq, why can't they get a few suicide bombers here? Not that I want them at all, but if this were really a danger And then you get into who's financing this whole Islamic terrorist movement? Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's great friends with the Bush administration, great friends with them. Saudi Arabia's financing the Wahhabi radical Islamic movement throughout the world. And if Saudi Arabia is financing that and 15 of the original hijackers were Saudi Arabians, maybe we attacked the wrong country. If you ever stop and think about that, we'll be right back with Deanna here in a moment. Well, Deanna, you just picked the story up.
Okay. I think there's a lot of correlations between what happened in Vietnam and what is happening now in Iraq. We went into Vietnam early on. We were there during World War II. The OSS was there, and they were helping Ho Chi Minh. They were helping him to defeat the French, trying to defeat the French. The French had been in Vietnam for generations and generations, and they were there for the resources. And there were a lot of resources there, and the French were there exploiting them. They were into the opium heroin traffic, and then the war started. And the Japanese came in, and the Japanese were hungry for oil because they didn't have any of their own, and we'd cut off their supplies. We'd sanctioned them, and really prompted them to go into Pearl Harbor, which the government, our government, knew about before it happened and allowed it to happen, which was a horrible thing. And that has come out in National Archives records, you know, some 50 years later. But anyway, the Japanese had gone into Vietnam, and then the war ended, the Japanese left, and the French returned. And Ho Chi Minh felt like, oh my goodness, you know, it's the end of the war, and we're going to be free. And then there was an event where the French went in and killed almost 6,000 Vietnamese, and that started the Indochina War, and this lasted for 8 years, and the Viet Minh finally defeated France in May of 1954. And again, they assumed that they were going to be independent. And the Geneva Conventions were held in June of 1954, and they decided, the power elite decided, that they would divide up the country at about the 17th parallel. Now, this was approved by Harry Truman at the Potsdam Conference in July, on July of 1945, and this was done for military purposes. However, if you go back to about 1935, there was a little bit of oil discovered at the 17th parallel, which is very interesting. Because when we think of Iraq, we think, oh, well, you know, we're there for the oil. And people always assume.
Hold that thought right there. We want to bring our stations on board here. Well, Deanna was simply pointing out that certainly the United States was in Vietnam even during the Second World War. And, of course, at that time, the Japanese were occupying the country, and of course, the Vietnamese wanted to be free. The Japanese drove out the French, who had been there exploiting the country for a couple of centuries for its natural resources. And, of course, French was one of the major languages of Vietnam. But it was a colonial. It was totally under the control of France. The people wanted to be free. And so, certainly after the Second World War ended, the French wanted to reimpose their rule, and the Vietnamese didn't want to, and so Ho Chi Minh led the battle against the French colonialism, and eventually the French were driven out of Vietnam in 1954. And then they thought they were going to have an opportunity for freedom. Now people say, well, but Ho Chi Minh was a communist. Yes, he was a communist, and he was financed by the United States. Those of you who have never heard my interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the CIA liaison, pardon me, the Pentagon liaison to the CIA, will remember that basically we had massive supplies, military supplies, on Okinawa at the end of the Second World War, and half of those supplies were sent to Korea in preparation for the Korean War. This was 1945, 4 years before the war began, and the other half were sent to Ho Chi Minh to be used against the French, because we were going to help Ho Chi Minh overthrow the French so that they could be free. And then, of course, we moved right in and take over where the French left off. And you pick up the story there, Deanna.
Right. And it was a Rockefeller that arranged that transfer of those weapons from Okinawa to Ho Chi Minh. And he felt, well, you know, when it comes time, when they win the war, they'll remember this good service that we've offered them, and they will let us come in. Because and Rockefeller knew this, there was oil in the South China Sea. And so the big interest in Vietnam was the oil. And of course the oil was probably 200 feet deep, and deep water excavation, had not really come around until during the 50s when it was discovered how to find the soil and where it was. But anyway, this was our big interest in Vietnam. And also, it's a very strategic area. The South China Sea has like 300 boat ships going through daily. I mean, it's a huge area. It's a strategic area. But anyway, so we always have to have an enemy. And so Ho Chi Minh, in the media and our government, decided that he was the bad guy, and so they set up a government in the South. And the government that they set up in the South was an American-educated Catholic by the name of Ngo Dinh Diem, who considered himself a benign dictator. And he was a dictator. And keep in mind that this was a Buddhist country, particularly the South. There was a lot of Buddhists in the South. And so what they did...
Was Diem a Catholic? I think he was, wasn't he?
He was. He was a Catholic.
Sure. So your point, what we did is we installed Diem and his brother-in-law, Mr. Nu. They were the American puppets in South Vietnam. Go ahead.
Right. And he lived in America. And we took him over there and installed him. And so in order to fix the elections, there was a lot of Catholics that were living up north. And so the CIA went in and they used psychological and physical terrorism to intimidate a million Catholics who were by then panic-stricken to move south into this predominantly Buddhist area.
That was so that they would be able to get our candidate, Mr. Diem, and Mr. Nu, or at least Mr. Diem, elected. Was that right?
Right, because there were supposed to be elections by 1956. According to the Geneva Conventions, the elections were to be held in July of 1956, and hopefully this would reunite Vietnam, which was always Ho Chi Minh's dream. Now, although he had gone to Russia, he'd lived in Russia, he'd also lived in France, he was really a nationalist, and he cared about his country, and he felt that the country belonged to the people who lived there. He felt that the country belonged to the Vietnamese. He wanted to get rid of the French. He wanted the country to belong to the people. He wanted the resources to belong to the people. And rightfully so. And he wanted the country to be reunited. And this division was really supposed to be just a temporary thing. And so, in order to fix the elections, the CIA decided that they would bring all these Catholics down south. Now, not only did they use terrorism to intimidate them, but they also used planes and naval ships to transport them. We actually moved them south.
A million people.
And the government, our tax dollars, paid for that move.
And now, of course, then you have enough people in the South, Catholic, that they can get Mr. Diem elected. In other words, he's our candidate. We've got to get him elected. And because we have to sort of play this game of democracy. Oh, we believe in representative government, even though, of course, there was a lot of other groups there, certainly the Buddhists in large part, but there were a number of other sects, and they didn't want Mr. Diem. But we had the majority of votes, and so we got our candidate elected. And we do this. We're still doing this all over the world today. Go ahead.
But you know, they never actually had the election. Diem just decided that he was going to be the president, and that's the way it was. And they moved all of these Catholics down there, which caused a lot of problems, a lot of religious strife with the Buddhists. There were monks who were lighting themselves afire, and it was just a horrible situation. And of course, our media, our government was saying, oh, these poor people, they're trying to get away from the communists. Look how they're moving. Look how they're fleeing the north because they want to escape communism. And they said, oh, you know, when communism moves in, those who want liberty move out.
Well, of course, that really is true because communism is a terrible and brutal system, and there certainly were communists there working with Ho Chi Minh. He would have been trained in communism. But go ahead.
Sure. But he was more of a nationalist than he was a communist. And the government saying, oh, all these people are fleeing, without telling the United States citizens, hey, we scared them. It wasn't the communists that scared them. It was the CIA that was scaring them with all the propaganda and their terrorist activities up there. They were exploding the post offices and doing some of the same things that they've probably done throughout the world to terrorize the local citizens. And that is what caused them to move. It wasn't communism, because these people were not really, they knew nothing about communism, capitalism, or anything else. These were just groups of people who lived in an agrarian society. They were not political.
No, but of course, I think they frightened them with the tales of the communist atrocities, and the communists were coming after them because they were Catholic, and so they frightened the people, and a million people moved to the South.
Sure.
And then, of course, these people have no property there. They have no jobs there. And,
of course,
they've got to take them away from the Buddhists. And so you've got all this strife that you create by moving a million people around in a little country like that.
Right, right. And so you did have, you had the political strife. And the people in the South, that was a very agrarian area. Actually, the North was more settled. And the South is where all the rice was raised. And when Diem went in, he got rid of the Chinese merchants, and the Chinese merchants were the ones that took care of merchandising the rice from the farmers.
Right.
And they also brought in water to drink, drinkable water. And so when Diem came in, he got rid of these Chinese people, the Chinese.
And they were the ones that sort of made the society work. They were the merchants, and without merchants, then how do you sell your rice if you're a rice farmer?
Right. And he also got rid of the French, and the French were the people that had created the security. So you had no security, and you had no merchants. So the rice that the farmers grew sat on the docks and rotted. They didn't have any water to drink, except rice, you know, horrible water that they'd grown the rice in. They didn't have any fresh water. So you had a lot of illness. You had a lot of sickness. It was terrible. And people had no jobs. There was starvation. And it was a terrible, terrible situation. And I think you can compare it to the situation where I think we're having a lot of illegal aliens come into certain areas. They're taking the jobs. The people in those areas, the residents, feel resentment. And the people in South Vietnam also felt resentment for all these strangers coming in, because people in Vietnam had lived in the same villages for decades and decades, and they lived where their ancestors lived. Their ancestors were buried in the local areas. They were leaving their ancestors' burial grounds. This was a terrible, terrible thing, culturally, economically, and the CIA and our government are the entities that created this chaos.
Hold that. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Deanna Spingola and talking about Vietnam. All right, Deanna, go ahead with the story.
Okay, so we have this terrible chaos, and this is about 19... Okay, we're...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
a one-party rule. There was no opposition, and the CIA made sure there was no opposition. But all of this was part of a long-range plan, because the invisible government, the CFR, the elitists, wanted a war in Vietnam. And how are they going to get a war going over there? Why, they had to have this conflict. And believe me, I mean, all you have to do is look at what's going on in Iraq today. And you have to ask yourself, why didn't we just win the war and get out of there? Well, if we'd won the war and got out of there, why, we wouldn't have justified keeping our troops. As soon as we had won the war, and that was in March, pardon me, in April of 2003, why, the Council on Foreign Relations, lackeys sent Paul Bremer over there to dissolve the Iraqi army, to dissolve the Iraqi police force, to dissolve the Iraqi civil service so there'd be no electricity or water or sewage, and then to close down all the factories so there was no jobs for the people, and the only way you could get a job and support your family was to join the insurgents and start killing the Americans. Why would you do something that stupid unintentionally? Mr. Bremer is a very brilliant individual. They knew exactly what they were doing. If you didn't have chaos, how could you possibly justify keeping the American troops in Iraq fighting? And, of course, they were laying the groundwork in Vietnam to create the chaos there as well. So you go ahead, Deanna.
And it's the exact same thing. In fact, talking about Iraq, there's a wonderful movie, it's a video. It's called No End in Sight. And it tells all about what we did to create the chaos and all the machinations that we did, and it's just awful, just terrible. I think that should be required viewing for every American so that they could really understand what is going on in Iraq. But we did the same thing in Vietnam. And remember that Diem was the American asset. And he repeatedly refused the North Vietnamese initiatives for national unity elections. And so the North became the duly designated Communist Democratic Republic of Vietnam, and the South became the Anti-Communist Republic of Vietnam. And so Diem was financed by our country. We trained his troops. And we also supplied him with money, which, of course, the taxpayers were not aware of. And Ho Chi Minh had guerrilla units. And the people, what his idea was, he would form a more powerful and effective resistance organization. And so they created what is called the National Front for the Liberation of South Vietnam. And this was created in December of 1960. And this is what was referred to by the Americans as Viet Cong. But basically, it was comprised of a dozen different political and religious groups. And the leader was a non-Marxist. He was a Saigon lawyer. And he's the one that took charge of this guerrilla unit. And there were other members of the movement who supported communism. And you know, communism always appeals to the downtrodden because of their dogma. It's very deceptive and it appeals to them. But it's always been a tool of the wealthy. But the National Front for the Liberation of South Vietnam had a 10-point plan. And the first objective was to replace the Diem government with one that represented all social classes and religions. And actually, a lot of the people in South Vietnam, particularly the peasants, supported this group. They supported Ho Chi Minh's group. And because a lot of those peasants had worked for the rich landlords for years and years. And 2.5% of the population owned 50% of the agricultural land in South Vietnam. So you had a lot of very poor people working for very rich people, and what the National Liberation Front, Ho Chi Minh's group, wanted to do was to redistribute the land so that everybody would own some land that they could farm and take care of themselves.
Of course, that sounds very good, but the way it usually ends up is, of course, you've got the elite running, except now it's the communist elite running the country and owning the land. And so they make promises that are very, very appealing to the average individual. I mean, wouldn't you like to get 10 acres of land you could farm? And everybody wants that without understanding that communism is an elitist system. Run by elitists for elitists.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Deanna was telling us certainly how the communists were able to get an awful lot of people recruited to go along with their program. So pick the story up there, Deanna.
Okay, so the NLF, which is the National Liberation Front, Ho Chi Minh's group, did have a lot of support from the peasants. And in order to inhibit this influence, the DM government and the United States moved the peasants to fortified villages. And the villages, the villages were built by the peasants, without pay. They dug moats, they built the huts, they erected stockades, and these were patrolled by the South Vietnamese Army, the ones that the United States trained. And so these peasants were blockaded in. And this was so Ho Chi Minh's group wouldn't influence them. And this program was called the Strategic Hamlet. And it was basically enforced internment. And it placed them away from the rice fields, which made it more difficult for them to walk and do the work that they wanted to do. It also placed them away from their ancestral burial grounds. And all this did was increase the hostility that the peasants felt towards the American-controlled government, and it made them more loyal to the growing Ho Chi Minh group, the NLF. And so basically, they viewed the NLF as friends and the DM government and the American military as enemies. And so these were all people who were in South Vietnam. And they were actually on Ho Chi Minh's side. And so the NLF had a very strict code of behavior when they entered and liberated a South Vietnamese village. And here was their code. Number one, that they were not to do what is likely to damage the land or the crops or spoil the houses and the belongings of the people. They were not to insist on buying or borrowing what the people are not willing to sell or lend. Number three, they were never to break their word. Number four, they were not to speak what is likely to make people believe that we hold them in contempt. Number five, they were to help them in their daily work.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back. Well, of course, Deanne is going over some of the rules that the NLF, which was the communist, used. But of course, Deanna, sometimes they would go in, and if there were people there that were supportive of the Americans, wouldn't they kill them? And these are in the strategic hamlets. In other words, the communists would go get into a strategic hamlet, and my understanding is that, you know, if there were people there supportive of the Americans, why, of course, the North Vietnamese would kill them. In a similar manner, if the Americans found people who were supportive of the NLF or the Viet Cong, they would kill them too. So, I mean, the poor old civilians there, they didn't dare take one side or the other.
Sure. But remember that 80% of the Vietnamese people were in favor of Ho Chi Minh.
Okay, and I'm sure there were an awful lot of them who were in favor of Ho Chi Minh. These were not necessarily the Catholics, but these were the people of South Vietnam, the Buddhists and the others, because Ho Chi Minh was, to many, a national hero.
Sure.
And he had defeated the French, and in the name of bringing them freedom, And without understanding the political implications, they identified with Ho Chi Minh, who had driven the French from their land so they could be free. And now, of course, the Americans were coming in, and they didn't like that. They wanted to be free.
Sure. They wanted their land. They wanted to be left alone. They wanted to farm their land. They wanted the resources. And, you know, all war is resource-oriented. We talk about going in and getting rid of dictators, and we talk about going in and bringing democracy, but basically, most war is because of resources. And so, but anyway, you had people in the South, Diem, and then you had the people in the North, Ho Chi Minh, and there were new governments because these people had never governed themselves before. Remember, the French had always been their government. The French had always supplied the security, and they had always governed. And then you have this big war. You have 8 years of war. Well, first of all, you have the Second World War. Then you have another 8 years of war, and you have a war-devastated country. You have the bridges had been blown up. The infrastructure, what there was of it, was ruined. And so then you have two brand new governments, and they were both floundering. This was a perfect, perfect scenario to create chaos and more problems on top of more problems, and it was just a planned conflict. And it was necessary to have this conflict in order for us to have this proxy war that we were doing, and basically it was a proxy war. So it was actually the first war in the Cold War. You know, we had Korea, North and South, and then we have Vietnam, North and South. And these were the conflicts, first conflicts in the Cold War. And the U.S. taxpayers were paying through the nose. Because they were supplying about $250 million a year to South Vietnam.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that they did not finance the Vietnam War with taxes. They simply borrowed money, just like we're doing now. In other words, what the whole idea is, you don't want to raise taxes because you get everybody mad at you. So you just start borrowing money from generations yet unborn, and then, of course, as the federal debt rises, you create inflation, so the money isn't so valuable, so you really don't have to pay it back with money that had the same value as the money that you borrowed.
Sure.
So they financed the Vietnam War, just as they're financing the Iraq War today, with borrowed money. But the American people don't understand that. In fact, even when they appropriate all this money for Iraq, it doesn't go on the budget. It goes off budget. And then they just borrow the money to pay it off. And the American people don't understand they're never planning on paying off the national debt. The national debt we ran up during Vietnam and the national debt we're running up today. When George Bush took office, I think the national debt was about $3.03 or $3.4 billion. Today it's over trillion dollars. Today it's over $9 trillion. All that money has simply been put down a rabbit hole, never to be retrieved. Go right ahead.
Unbelievable. You know, without the Federal Reserve, you know, the Americans would never finance war. If the politicians came to the citizens and said, okay, we need this money for a war, if we had to hand them the money, we would never say yes to war. We wouldn't have war without the Federal Reserve. But it's very unfortunate. But anyway, so we were there, there was guerrilla warfare, and then in 1964, there was the...
No, don't forget, in 1963, just about 2 weeks before Kennedy was assassinated, they killed Diem. And his brother-in-law knew, because they wanted to bring in different people, and the CIA had them killed.
Right.
And that's covered in the book Double Cross, and it was even covered in the congressional investigations that followed about how the CIA killed this man that we put in power there. Poor old
right.
Mr. Diem and his brother-in-law. Go ahead.
Right. And it was like 2 weeks. It was the same month, in November of 63. It was the same month that Kennedy was assassinated. So there were two political assassinations, probably for the very same reason. Because I don't think that Diem wanted all of our influence. He wanted our money, but I don't think that he wanted our military to be in there. And yet we had decided that we were going to send our military in, not to the extent that we did after the Tonkin Bay incident.
No, they had to have a phony incident, and the
Shelf
at Tonkin was a phony incident. It didn't occur, and 58,000 American boys died for nothing. But you have to understand, it was a great diversion. And so during that time, when our attention was focused on Vietnam and the weeping widows and the weeping wives, of the people who died there, during that time, they could change America. They could take God and prayer out of our schools. They could begin to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. They could find a woman had a right to an abortion. They could suddenly change our immigration laws. But the biggest thing was bringing in the welfare state, Medicare, Medicaid, the war on poverty, the war on cancer, all of these phony wars that we were going to have. In fact, George Bundy wrote an article in Foreign Affairs, January of 67, where he said, we're in a social revolution. The lead article, the end of either or. It would be an act of folly for any American to say we ought to have a choice between guns and butter, between persistence in Vietnam and pulling out of Vietnam, because exactly the opposite is the case. The road forward at home, towards the socialist system is by persistence in Vietnam. If we pull out, there'll be tremendous, resistance and opposition to our programs. Big George Bundy was head of the National Security Council. Big George Bundy was skull and bones. Big Bundy was a CFR. Big George Bundy went on to become the president of the Ford Foundation. He was part of the establishment. They needed the diversion to bring in the social revolution, and that's what Vietnam was all about. And if we really look very closely, I think we'd realize that's what Iraq is all about as well. You go right ahead.
Okay. Diem was really rather ruthless. Ho Chi Minh at the end of the French, when he beat the French, he proposed a constitution very much like our own for a united Vietnam. And basically it was a carbon copy of our own constitution. But Diem wanted to change that. He took out a few things and he put in a few things. But basically what he did was he prohibited the freedom of the press. He prohibited free speech and other liberties. And he claimed that these despotic measures would bring greater security to the country. And he thought that that individuals considered dangerous to the national defense and common security should be confined by executive order to a concentration camp. Now, the people that he put into these camps were the Buddhist monks and the nuns, because he felt that they were particularly dangerous. And there were hundreds and hundreds were imprisoned. And because, of course, the religious the monks and the nuns would have a great deal of influence with the civilians. And by 1963, the U.S. already had over 16,000 military advisors in the South, and they wanted to increase that number, and Diem did resist. So he was eliminated and replaced by a more cooperative leader. And it was approved by Kennedy. He approved a military coup, and he said he wanted just a change, but instead of the bloodless change that he wanted, both Diem and his brother were assassinated on November the 1st, 1963. On the instructions of W. Averill Harriman, who was CFR, he was the Marshall Plan Administrator, and he kind of managed American policy behind the scenes.
Right.
He was a he was the power elite.
In fact, what people have forgotten is Averill Harriman, of course, was deeply involved with the communists in Russia and the aluminum mining there, and he had all sorts of business deals with the Russian communists. And
right.
Yet here he is now, of course, moderating and with the anti-communists in South Vietnam, and it's all a game, and the average American has no idea how the game is played. Go ahead.
Right. And, in fact, E. Howard Hunt, who was a CIA operative, takes some cables in an attempt to implicate Kennedy in Diem's assassination. Okay, then you had McGeorge Bundy, who you've already mentioned, who was a national security advisor to both Kennedy and Johnson, and his brother, William P. Bundy, and both of these are Skull and Bones. Their father was Skull and Bones, and they were both the chief architects of the event of the Vietnam War. And they are the two that co-authored the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. And so then you had David Rockefeller, who was CFR chairman at the time. And William Bundy served as editor of the CFR magazine. But anyway, the U.S. government and the media really played this out, and with Kennedy and with Diem. So Diem's gone, and then you have the Tonkin Gulf situation, which was basically a false flag. It was a false flag operation, which means that something happened, something occurred, and they blamed it on somebody else. And this was something, a false flag was also similar to the Operation North Woods, which was another false flag that was supposed to have happened, or they wanted it to happen in Cuba. They wanted to go after a plane or do an attack and then blame Cuba so that we could go in and invade Cuba.
And basically they wanted to stage an attack on the United States and convince the American people that it had been carried out by Fidel Castro to justify attacking Fidel Castro. And if you haven't read Operation Northwood, you can get it off the internet, or it is included in its entirety in our syllabus entitled Iraq, the Untold Story. And if I could suggest you get that talk, Iraq, the Untold Story, and the syllabus, because you'll get the entire Operation Northwoods report, secret, top secret report, you know, prepared in 1962 and presented to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and authorized, and they would have gotten us into a war with Cuba, you know, in 1962. The only trouble was, of course, that since we'd brought Fidel Castro to power, and I'm sure Kennedy knew that, the last thing they wanted was to justify a war with Cuba. After
right.
all, the Bay of Pigs was fought not to defeat Fidel Castro, but to convince us we couldn't get him out of power.
Right.
What most people don't understand is Fidel, as David Rockefeller's daughter, is a good friend of Fidel Castro, and you can get that from David Rockefeller's memoirs, which we carry, and of course, David Rockefeller, the most powerful man in America, has had meetings with at least one, and I believe several meetings with Fidel Castro, but at least we know he's had one meeting with Fidel Castro, and his daughter regularly goes down to Cuba to commensurate with her good friend, Fidel. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. Amazing.
Really?
Amazing. And you're never going to read this in the newspaper.
Right.
Never.
That's why we carry the book of, you know, the David Rockefeller's memoirs. We want our listeners to get that book and have the documentation before somebody gets all the books burned. But go ahead.
Which might happen. So there were documents. There are documents, as you mentioned, that were released from the National Security Agency. And it talked about these ships in the Tonkin Bay. And there was supposed to have been an attack in August. On August 2nd, and they say that the North Vietnamese torpedo boats attacked the USS Maddox under questionable circumstances. And then they said that there was a second attack on U.S. ship on August the 4th. But the evidence was skewed, just as it was for Iraq. And so, anyway, we went in, and that war lasted until 1973. 1975 is when we actually got out of there. But 58,000 of our military were killed. 3 million Vietnamese. We used chemical warfare. We used Agent Orange, napalm. The further destruction of Vietnam's infrastructure. Billions of dollars. About 30 years of American intervention. Dan.
Well, I think the most significant thing is our military fought very bravely. They were never allowed to win the war. The rules of engagement were designed to keep them from doing it. And just as the rules of engagement in Iraq are designed to keep that from happening. And if you haven't read the speech by General Ricardo Sanchez, that'll be our January newsletter. You want to read, want to know what he said about how we've never tried to win in Iraq. He was a commander over in Iraq. But you're not going to read about that in the New York Times. Hold on. Our guest is Deanna. Deanna, do you have a website you'd like to get out?
Sure. Spingola.com.
Spingola.com. That's S-P-I-N-G-O-L-A. Spingola.com. Deanna's articles are well-researched, very well thought out. You'll enjoy them. Deanna, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay.
And you're just basically saying that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was staged. I mean, it really was.
It was.
It didn't occur. They needed an excuse to get us into the war. They got it one, and 58,000 American boys died for nothing because we never tried to win the war. The military was never allowed to win the war any more than the military is being allowed to win the war in Iraq and Afghanistan today. But go ahead.
Right. We did a defoliation of the forest there. We destroyed the food crops. Agent Orange, which is made by Monsanto and contains dioxin, is one of the most toxic substances ever produced. And it accumulates in the body of animals and humans. People in Vietnam are still suffering from the effects of this poison.
And so are some of the boys who were there. And
exactly.
They lied to our boys year after year after year, saying there was nothing wrong with Agent Orange. And they knew it wasn't true. And
exactly.
You can check on that now to find out they lied. Why, if they'd lied then, would they lie to us now? And who's ever been punished for lying to the American people or damaging so many of our boys with Agent Orange?
No one. We lost a lot of people. The Vietnamese lost a lot of people. After the war, they suffered 20 years of sanctions, which we hardly ever hear about, but they were sanctioned up until 1995 when Clinton finally lifted those sanctions. And then, of course, the big multinational businesses went in and are doing great business there. Their standard of living is very low. They do not make that much money. They are a younger population in Vietnam. There are a lot of workers and for the multinational companies. But the poison and like you say, that Agent Orange affected our boys also, just like depleted uranium is affecting our troops now in Iraq. And the government does not take care of the medical problems that our troops have.
Deanna, we're out of time. We could go on for another hour. Maybe we'll have to do that sometime. It's been a fascinating hour, and I really appreciate your input. I hope our listeners have learned a lot from what you've said.
Thank you very, very much for having me on.
Good night, Deanna. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye.
Have a wonderful Christmas.
You too. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Deanna, because people do not understand. I mean, people think communism is the enemy. Communism has been financed by the United States since its inception. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why you need to get the pamphlet we produced called The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. The term was actually put forward by Solzhenitsyn in a speech he gave in 1975, totally blacked out. In fact, if you see references to the speech, it was reproduced in the Congressional Record, but they give the wrong pages when they refer to it, so you won't find it. But we produced that speech. You'll certainly want to read it. You'll want to read the pamphlet, The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, Professor Sutton's book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, and then my interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. The information's available through Radio Liberty. Believe me, they've tried to suppress this for years. They cannot let you understand that most of what you believe just isn't true, that they've created enemies and then, of course, rallied the American people behind the elite here, because behind the elite are powerful spiritual forces. And you trace the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, you find it came out of a secret society founded in the occult by Cecil Rhodes and Lord Milner back in 1891. That is the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations today, and you'll find all of this documented in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and, of course, in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which we do carry. The book has been suppressed for many years. Now, Professor Quigley never recognized the spiritual component of all of this, because he was an elitist, he was an atheist, and yet we are indebted to him for the research he did in exposing the secret society that led to the formation of the Council on Foreign Relations, that controls both political parties, that controls American foreign policy, that controlled American policy during the Second World War, and the no-win war in Korea, and the no-win war in Vietnam, and the current no-win war in Iraq and in Afghanistan. When you begin to understand that nothing is as it appears to be, then things begin to make sense. So we do hope you want to challenge what we say. The books we've mentioned are important to understand the background of how communism has been financed since its inception from right here in the United States, the best enemy that money could buy. And the same thing, of course, with communist China. But my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is a key, and it will give you the references where you can begin to go and get the information. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces and secret societies. And you can go up on the internet and look up the OTO. Aleister Crowley's a satanic organization. The OTO has a chapter meetings today. The Theosophists, the Rosicrucians, the Masons, and of course the Lucis Trust. Probably the most powerful coordinating organization of today, with headquarters in New York, Geneva, and London, and financed through the new group of world servers by some of the most powerful and wealthiest men in the world today. But you're not going to read about that in your local newspapers, because they control the newspapers. You're not going to hear this discussed by most of our ministries or by our conservative organizations, because many of them have been actually infiltrated by people on the other side. They always want a controlled opposition, and they're really masters at deceit. That was a term that J. Edgar Hoover used. He himself was a 33rd degree Mason. He was a homosexual. But that's something you're never going to hear. Why, he was the great anti-communist, and he was the great anti-communist, knowing full well, of course, that communism was the specter that would rally the people behind the government and justify taking away our freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, we got real problems. You need to start doing your research. Don't accept anything I say. Begin doing the reading. Get our material. RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views I've expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for this hour, our guest is Jackie Alnor. And Jackie has done some wonderful work and put together a great DVD on the influence of the New Age and the occult in modern-day life. And she and her husband have a ministry, and they actually have scheduled a program that's going to be somewhere in the middle of January down in Fullerton, is my understanding. And they're bringing in speakers who are going to be talking about the issues, and predominantly, all of the speakers are going to be women, and they're going to be talking about this New Age and occult influence on our society. Jackie, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the conference you're planning down there? And is it Fullerton?
Yes, it's going to be in Fullerton on January 18th and 19th, and it's going to be in the campus theater at Fullerton College. And Fullerton College is not to be confused with Cal State Fullerton. Fullerton College is a two-year college, and they have a really good facility there. And it's going to be streamed live on the Internet so that everybody can watch. If they can't make it through Godly Conferences, you can find that link to through Moriel Ministries. Now, Moriel Ministries is actually the ministry that is putting this on. I'm coordinating it, and I was able to get a lot of my friends who I networked with over the years. There's so many other people that I've been networking with who we exchange information, and we help each other with articles that we're writing or books or things that we're working on. And, God has just blessed so many women. I think there's a misconception that women do not dig or delve deeply into the Word of God, or that they, maybe aren't as astute as men in some theological things. But, I'm finding it's interesting because, I have a web page called Apostasy Alert, and I get into some things that might seem maybe too heavy for women, or people seem to think that. But I get more email from women than I do men who really want to look at the things that are going on today and where deception is really targeting women specifically. And they really are searching the scriptures, just like there's a lot of women Bereans out there. And, a lot of women's conferences and women's retreats, they're not really geared towards those women in the church who really do want to dig deep and really look at the days that we're living in and the dangers that we're seeing spiritually to ourselves and to our children. But, we are the ones who have the ears of our children. And unfortunately, some of these deceptions are geared towards children and women, especially mothers really need to be up on it. And then single women, so many times they have more time than mothers, to really get into the Word. And they really want fellowship with other women who really wanted to see, where we're at as far as the coming of the Lord and all of those things. So we're hoping to attract those women to come and join us and not be afraid to ask questions and really dig into the signs of the times and what Scripture has to say about that.
Well, I think one of the speakers is going to be Joanna Michelson, who's certainly one of my favorite people, a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty. We have a four-tape set of my interviews with her called The Supernatural. Oh, we carry her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. So the meeting would be well worthwhile going to just to hear Joanna. But this looks like a great lineup of people, and we're going to be back in just a moment with Jack as we talk about, what she's going to be talking about at the conference. Well, Jackie, what are you going to be covering at the conference?
Well, I'm doing two speak I'm speaking twice. The first one is going to be on the rise of false prophets, and the second one is going to be on ecumenism and how pretty much all these streams are joining together and what that's going to create. And of course, the false prophets, they do, you know, there's, I've talked to you about these before, people like Kim Clement, and who is very popular in the Bay Area. I don't know if you're familiar with
that.
No,
I'm really not acquainted with him.
Yeah, well, he wrote a book that is called Call Me Crazy, But I'm Hearing God. And the foreword to his book was written by the pastor of Jubilee Christian Center in San Jose, California. And his name's Dick Burnell. Are you familiar with Dick Burnell?
No, I'm not really. I'm afraid I'm sort of sequestered over here in my studio, so you're gonna have to fill me in on these.
Well, he's not very far from you. He has pretty much the biggest megachurch in San Jose. And he has Kim Clement come and speak at his church, at least twice a year, because Dick Burnell is considered the apostle over this particular prophet. So this particular prophet is very popular, and he is definitely in touch with something, but there's nothing holy about it.
And I think that is the problem we face today, is that there really are other forces out there that you can get in touch with, and you may not even understand that these are truly demonic forces that are speaking to you and guiding you. And that, of course, is one of the recurrent themes of our ministry, is that understand that there really is another dimension and you can tap into it, but you certainly don't want to, and you want to be absolutely certain that, you know, when you are, you get direction that it's coming from our side rather than from the other side.
Well, you know, Kim in his book on page 61 reveals what side that he is in contact with, and I just want to read you one sentence, and you tell me, Dr. Stan, if you recognize these terms. He says, "The law of attraction will draw people to you. The law of attraction is the light of tomorrow, God.
Well, I think that for our listeners out there who don't know what the law of attraction is, this, of course, has been popularized by Rhonda Burns in her book, The Secret, or her DVD, The Secret, and actually it came from Esther Hicks and her husband. And Esther Hicks actually channels a demonic spirit named Abraham, as I remember, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jackie Alnor is our guest. She's, of course, going to be speaking twice at this conference in Fullerton on the weekend of the 16th to the 18th of January. And, of course, the conference will be open, I'm sure, to both men and women, although I think it'll be primarily designed for women. But Jackie is simply talking about a gentleman in the Bay Area who says he's a prophet, and he's written a book. And in that book, he talks about how we can be guided by the law of attraction. Well, for those of you who don't know what the law of attraction is, the law of attraction was popularized by a woman named Esther Hicks and her husband, who've written rather extensively about this. And Esther Hicks is a medium. She is a medium for a demonic spirit named Abraham, and she goes around the country. She was sort of one of the inspirations for Rhonda Burns, who's written a book that sold millions of copies called The Secret, and a DVD by a similar manner, which is really an excellent DVD in many ways, because it in essence tells you that there is a secret that's been around for 5,000 years. It goes back to Hermes and the certainly in the Emerald Tablet, but you go ahead and pick these things up, Jackie.
It's interesting that you would mention Abraham, because I don't know if you're familiar with Roger Oakland. In fact, he's written a book called Faith Undone, which I recommend everybody read. It's really about how the emerging church is bringing in bringing people back to the mysticism of Catholicism, the Catholic side of the mystics and all of that. Well, he quoted in one of his messages, he quoted Leonard Sweet, who is one of the bigger voices of the people that are looking for the emerging church. And Leonard Sweet mentioned that he got his, he was guided by Abraham. And so it just seems that that the enemy is inspiring everybody in all different realms so that they can all come to the same message. And as I said, Kim Clement, who again is promoted by San Jose pastor Dick Brunell, he brings us to the law of attraction, who he claims is God. And again, that God doesn't really come across as a personal God, but more as an impersonal force, which is typical of a new age view of God. And again, these things are so popularized today. I know you had Constance Cumby on the other day, and she was, talking about how she had, back in the 1980s, had in her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, had shown where a plan was pretty much plotted out through the occult. And now those ideas really have come full circle into the church. They were just creeping into the church a little bit back when she wrote that book. But today, they are fully entrenched in all areas of the church. In the Catholic Church, in the liberal side of the church, in the so-called emergent church, in the charismatic church, they're all getting the same message, and the same buzzwords that they're using, from the charismatics to the emergent, who are, all considered evangelical Christians. They're using the same words that have been used by the occult. As a matter of fact, I'm sure you're probably familiar with Manly P. Hall.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Okay, and he wrote, again, the word secret keeps coming up, the secret destiny of America. I don't know if you've read his book called The Initiates of the Flame.
No, I really haven't. I've heard of it, but I've never read it.
Well, that one pretty much gives the blueprint, I think, that others have taken from. Of course, this book was written, back in 1944? I think it was 1922. But he, again, used the very same words. He called it all the law of attraction. And that was back in the 1920s. He was already calling all of this that was bringing all the secret societies and everybody together was the law of attraction.
Well, let me just for a moment explain to our listeners out there who Manly P. Hall was. He had something called the Philosophical Research, and I think it was the Foundation, but it was in Southern California, and it's still there. He was given a great deal of money to go around the world and, of course, get all of the documentation for all of the ancient secret societies and try to pull together all of the knowledge that has been gathered down through the ages by the esoteric and secret societies. In fact, it's said that, in the 1930s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, sent a team out to copy all the things that are in the library there at the Philosophical Research Foundation. If you certainly have not yet seen the DVD, Riddles in Stone, put out by Chris Pinto, you'll actually see the foundation, the library, the interviews with the man who runs this, since Manly P. Hall has gone to his just desserts. Manly P. Hall was a Satanist. He, if you read his books, there's no question, he worshipped Satan because he fell into this group of the so-called Gnostics who believe that there are two gods. There's the true God that will give you power and wealth and prosperity, and then there's a false God who's worshipped by the Christians and by the Jews. But people don't understand that there are literally millions of people who follow the teachings of Manly P. Hall, and he was a prolific writer, must have written 20 or 30 books. But he really gives you tremendous insight into what the other side thinks. And he was talking in the 1920s about the law of attraction?
Yes, he's used that very term. And he also says that the energy behind it all is Lucifer. So he says that in The Initiates of the Flame, and I don't have the book in front of me, but I did have it I got it out of our library at our local university at Cal State East Bay. Somebody donated a huge collection of Manly P. Hall books, hundreds of different, I don't know how many books he's written, but I mean hundreds of the books.
What was the title of that book again?
It's called The Initiates of the Flame. And And so, and the co, and it's, you know, colon, he who lives the life shall know the doctrine.
The initiates of the flame, and of course the flames are light, and of course that would be Lucifer.
Yes.
People don't understand. There really are people out there who worship Lucifer. No, that sounds like a book I'm going to have to get hold of.
Well, and it's very small. It's only about 80 pages, and yet it ties all of the everything together as far as the occult goes. And of course, you know, if you visit, I don't know if you've visited the Rosicrucian Museum in San Jose.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Have you ever visited the Rosicrucian Museum in San Jose?
I've seen it. I've never actually been there. I've seen the pictures of the outside. I've never been inside, though.
Oh, I visited it recently, and I mean the artifacts they have there is amazing. As a matter of fact, they have a mummy that science really now believes is the most likely pharaoh to have been the one that dealt with Moses, and they have that actual mummy there.
I mean, this for our listeners, though, it's really amazing as you see all this Egyptian imagery, you know, out in front of this building over in San Jose, and you're wondering what in heaven's name is it? Well, it is a museum, but it's really a headquarters for the Western branch of the Rosicrucians. The Rosicrucians were originated in the 1400s. They were simply an extension of the ancient mystery religions. And this is the mystery that was passed down to the Babylonians and Sumerians and Egyptians and to the Kabbalists and then to the Gnostics and then, of course, to the Knights Templar in the 1100s, 1200s, and then, of course, to the Rosicrucians in the 1400s. They're still here. They still have their secret meetings. And, of course, this is the center of knowledge. And if you tap into the force, you can have great wealth, but let me advise you, do not try to tap into the source of their wealth and power.
And yet, even in the church, they're using the same ideas. They're talking about quantum spirituality and using all these same kinds of words. Now, even you won't believe this, but Kim Clements, the so-called prophet that I was referring to, he has his new headquarters in Hollywood, which, again, Dick Burnell put a major part of the hundreds of thousands of dollars into that place, and he calls it The Secret.
The Secret.
Or Secrets. Excuse me. Secrets, plural, is the name of the place. It's just called Secrets. And so they're all using these same terms, you know, and still coming up with, you know, it's just the same kind of inspiration, I think, that comes back that far, you know, all the way back with the Rosicrucians and with, of course, Manly P. Hall having the law of attraction. And so we just know that, you know, it's all of the same spirit that is influencing all these different people. And it's going, you know, across every area, it seems, of Christianity, especially in the charismatic movement. They've had so many conferences that use the word secret in it. As a matter of fact, January 9th through 12th, 2008, is a big conference that is going on called The Secret Place. And this is with a lot of the so-called people who claim to be prophets today, such as Bob Jones, who was with the original Kansas City Prophets back in the 1980s. Heidi Baker is going to be one of the speakers there. And Joshua Mills and Todd Bentley, who is a man from Canada who is the head of Fresh Fire Ministries. And again, fire is the flame, is the whole center of their focus.
Well, you know, these are exciting times to live in, because there is so many things that just point to the fact that there will be an emergence of a new world leader here in the very, very near future, and I'm going to be interested in your thoughts on this new world leader. We see, I mean, the number of these organizations increasing. In years past, this would all been kept secret. People would never have come forward and talked about being in touch with the other dimension. But now, of course, it's common knowledge. We could talk about that in great detail. Well, this is Dr. Stan. In fact, I just got an email today from somebody who listened to my talk on the forbidden secret. And the fact that there is secret knowledge out there that you can tap into, but you don't want to tap into it because it's secret. And this man was rather incensed, and he said, of course there's secret knowledge out there. Of course there's secret power out there. But, I mean, after all, it's been accessed by the great philosophers and leaders of the past, and it's not all bad. I mean, it depends on how you use that secret knowledge, whether you use it for good or for evil. And so he let me know very strongly that he disagreed with my assessment in my talk on which traces this forbidden secret back 5,000 years and then brings it right up today, and how I would dare to say that this was dangerous. And you just wonder what this poor fellow is thinking. He really doesn't have any grasp what this is about. And I'm sure you must run into similar things as well, don't you, Jackie?
Oh, yes. I get all kinds of emails, especially. And, I get a lot of people mad with the things that I write, but I probably get more positive feedback. But, if you expose something, you know that people who hold on to those beliefs are not going to take that too well. I did want to confirm something about the conference. I think you gave the wrong date. It's going to be January 18th and 19th.
18th and 19th, and uh-huh. I apologize. And my I have a little note here from my wife on the screen. It says, I just may desert you for a couple of days, and I think she's thinking of coming. So she is certainly, I think, excited about what you're doing.
Yes, and let me tell you who some of the other speakers are. Now, you mentioned Johanna Michelson, the author of The Beautiful Side of Evil. She's going to be one of the speakers, and she'll be, talking about the beautiful side of evil. And another topic is sorcery and the judgment of God. It's going to be one of her topics. And then we're going to have Deidre Bobkin, who, along with her husband, Martin Bobkin, they wrote the classic Psychoheresy. And that's also the name of their ministry. And they wrote the book The Psychological Way and the Spiritual Way. So Deidre is really going to talk about, her topic is called The Victimization of the Believer, and really showing how this looking within and the focus on self is become such a trap for people these days. And then another speaker is going to be Duana Litz. And Duana Litz has done some very good research and writing into the whole feminist movement and its encroachment into the evangelical church. And she's going to be speaking on that. See, I believe that women are very are just as important a part of the church as men. At the same time, men are in leadership, and we believe in, and I'm sure most of the other speakers would agree with this, that men should be the leaders in the church. I mean, I'm not advocating feminism in the church. And so we do want to show where that has come in and has raised up a whole matriarchy of women in the church who are leading a lot of people astray. Somehow, women, maybe, I don't know if it's our makeup, are more drawn to some of this mystical stuff. And certainly the devil went to Eve, and he does his stuff, and he's still doing that. But, we need to, expose this kind of thing also.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Jackie Alnor. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our conference, our guest today is Jackie Alnor, and there's going to be a conference on the 18th and 19th of January. Is that right, Jackie?
That's right.
All right, fine. Now, is there a phone number to register, and how can people get information, and local hotels and things like that, because some people will be coming from other places.
Sure. There's a brochure on the homepage of Moriel Ministries, and that would be www.moriel.org.
And how do you spell Moriel?
Moriel.org. And the brochure there will give you information as far as the location and all of that. And hotels, they can email me for a list of hotels. We're not having any pre-registration since we're not charging for this conference. This is a free conference. We'll be taking a love offering to help carry the cost. And, you know, we'll have, all the speakers will have their have tables, and they'll be selling the conference tapes, and hopefully make the money back that way that we had to put out for the to rent the hall and all of that. So we are not charging, so there's no need to register. And we, you know, we really want to encourage people to come, because I really think this is a very unique gathering, because we don't exclude men from coming. In fact, some men might be uncomfortable if their wives go without them being, well, let's make sure, you know, that you know, this isn't your typical women's conference. And so some husbands might not be comfortable letting their wives go without them being there. It depends on, I guess, the people. So we don't want to exclude the husbands if they do want to come, because we want to encourage everybody to be Bereans. I also wanted to mention another speaker that's going to be there is Jill Martin Riesch, and she is the daughter of the late Walter Martin, the original Bible Answer Man. And she is just soon to be releasing a book called The Kingdom of the Occult. Now, her father wrote the famous book, The Kingdom of the Cult. And she helped to update that book also and have that published. And now she's put together The Kingdom of the Occult. So she, again, is another one that I think everybody would really love to listen to. And she's going to talk about goddess worship in the church. And unfortunately, that exists even in the walls of the church.
In fact, Jill Martin Riesch is going to be our guest a week from tonight, and we're going to have her on and talking about her new book, The Kingdom of the Occult, which will be, of course, the kingdom of the cult, the continuation of what her dad had written about, Walter Martin, The Kingdom of the Cult. So we still have that book, so we're looking forward to her book, because the occult is alive and well and permeates every aspect of our society today. And the great tragedy is Americans don't understand that it's even permeated the Christian church.
Yep. And, you know, another conference is going to be held at the same time as ours, right down the street, on the very same street. Fullerton College is on Chapman Avenue, as is the Crystal Cathedral, you know, Robert Schuller's church. He's going to be having this mega conference at the Crystal Cathedral on that very same weekend, and it's called the Rethinking Conference. They want to rethink Christianity. They don't like, you know, they want to get rid of whatever the old concepts of Christianity is and come up with a new one in a way that makes the culture more acceptable, accepting of it. And some of the people that are going to be rethinking Christianity over there include people like Larry King, and the former President George Bush, Rick Warren's wife Kay, Lee Strobel, Charles Colson, George Barna, Rupert Murdoch. You know who Rupert Murdoch is?
Yes, certainly. Certainly, Rupert Murdoch is Zondervan Publishing, Fox News, one of the largest publishers in the world today. But of course, what people don't understand is when he was in college, he was known as Rupert the Red, Rupert Murdoch, that is, because he kept a bust of Lenin on his desk, and he still has that same bust of Lenin today. Go right ahead.
And also another speaker is going to be Santa Cruz's own Dan Kimball, who has written a lot of books on the, including one called The Emerging Church, and he too wants to destroy whatever we evangelicals think of biblical Christianity in exchange for one that will appeal to the culture. And so he's going to be with all of these movers and shakers to come up with a whole new church.
And of course, this is the thing, they want to have a new church. And some of these very, very prominent leaders will have a tremendous impact on people. After all, wouldn't you like to hear the former President of the United States or many of the other speakers we're talking about? But beware, because, of course, the message they're putting out is, of course, not of biblical Christianity, but of a new religion, and will bring a new world religion. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, this evening is Jackie Elnor. We're talking about the conference they're going to be having, and then, of course, the conference is going to be for women. It's going to be talking about the influences that are in our society, and these are really, we can call them New Age, we can call them occult, we can call them esoteric, we can call them the continuation of the ancient mystery religions, we can call them the new religion, the new Christianity, which of course is taking over from the old outmoded Christianity. Of course, I don't really believe that, but I believe, you know, the Bible is the same yesterday, today, and forever, but there are people who change Christianity because if we could just make it popular, we could get a lot more people involved, and that's a really rather convincing argument, isn't it, Jackie?
Oh, sure, because, you know, they don't want to be persecuted for the sake of the gospel, so they want to present it in a way that won't draw attention to anybody's sins, you know, that will be accepting of all beliefs. This is another really ugly trend in all of these areas of the church that are getting off is ecumenism. And that's going to be my second message. The first one's going to be on the false prophets, and the second one is ecumenism. Where is it all going? Well, not only are all the different streams of Christianity being, you know, brought through into being, you know, so they're kind of bringing the occult in, but they're all streaming back to Rome. And besides going back to Rome, the same things are going on within the Catholic Church as well. And they, of course, as has been documented many times over, the former Pope has, you know, been with the Dalai Lama all the time and, you know, all of the other world religions. Because the Vatican wants to see itself as the head of all religion. And they have to also, so they're working on a couple of fronts of, you know, ecumenism within all of whatever is Christendom, and then also ecumenism with all the world religions. And making the common denominator so wide that everybody can fit in. And you know, if you study Bible prophecy, and I'm sure, and I know you do, Dr. Stan, you know that this is so prophetic, because we know that the Antichrist and the false prophet are going to rise up, and they're going to have a one-world religion, and they're going to have to somehow twist Christianity enough to look at this man who they claim is Christ and to worship him.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jackie Elnor. And, of course, Jackie's going to be talking about the coming world leader and the ecumenism, which, of course, refers to the uniting of all religions. And, of course, those of you who listen to my programs regularly will notice that we always stress that the ultimate goal is a new world order, a new world religion, and a new world leader. So she's going to be talking on two of the subjects which we emphasize over and over again, which we think are so vitally important. This is the master plan put into, you know, into one short sentence. Well, before we go on, Jackie, would you like to get your website out again? And you're going to have to spell that Moriel so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Okay, well, Moriel Ministries is the ministry that is sponsoring the conference, and they are www.moriel, that's M-O-R-I-E-L, .org. And again, that the head of that ministry is an evangelist and teacher, Jacob Prash. I don't know if you're familiar with Jacob Prash, but he's a Jewish believer and an excellent teacher, and just, you know, someone that has helped me understand so much, especially with Bible prophecy. He's just amazing. He's, you know, totally fluent in Hebrew and even in Greek. And so he's amazing. And he's even going to be there and is going to kind of launch the conference and introduce it to everybody. So
will he actually be speaking or not?
Yes, he will be there. He'll be there to at the very beginning of the conference, that which will be 6 o'clock on that Friday, January 18th, so that he can greet and, you know, kind of introduce the the whole idea of having this women's conference where men aren't excluded.
All right, fine.
A funny way to put it. But, you know, you were talking about how all these dreams coming together and even in the world and everything. You know, these same deceptions that we're seeing in the church, in all areas of the church, we're also seeing in the world, just like you were talking about The Secret, and you know Oprah Winfrey is, you know, the big promoter of this whole thing. And I don't know if you caught her her speech she did for Obama.
No, I didn't.
Because at the end of it, you know how when she was going to introduce him, she says, she makes this statement, she says, "Are you the one?
Are you the one?"
Yes. And she had it over and over again. "Are you the one?" You know, that's just something creepy about that.
Well, of course, when you realize, of course, that there is this move towards a one world leader, this man who will lead the world, you know, to this wonderful utopian society. But, of course, Christians understand this is not the Christ, but this is actually, of course, the Antichrist, certainly this demonic being. And of course, I personally believe, although some people might disagree, but there is a trinity of evil, just as we in Christianity we have the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit. So there is a trinity of evil, and that is Satan, and then the false prophet. Pardon me, the Antichrist and the false prophet. The false prophet would be the religious leader. And I would think that the Antichrist would be the one who would actually be the world leader. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I agree, and yet
you don't have to agree with me now.
Except that I might identify it a little bit different, but there is that trinity of evil. There will be that false prophet, and there'll be the Antichrist. And yet there's the spirit of the age.
Right.
Is the unholy spirit. There's an interesting prophecy. Oh, it's in one of the prophets, and I can't. If I had a concordance in front of me, I could find it. That talks about in that day he will remove the prophet and the unclean spirit from the land. And it's a millennial prophecy. And so it doesn't even say he'll remove the false prophet. It's almost like you assume any prophets at that time will be false, because he's going to remove the prophet and the unclean spirit. And in another translation called it the unholy spirit. And so, and I think it's in Zechariah, so I might have to look it up. But it's very interesting, because that is the spirit of the age. I mean, I know they call it Zeitgeist or whatever, but that is bringing all of these things together. You know, people talk about conspiracies and all that. There is a cosmic conspiracy going on. This spirit is influencing, and you can see his fingerprints in all elements of society. And they're saying the same thing. They're telling everybody, you know, God is not a personal transcendent God over his universe, but he is part of it. This whole idea of panentheism, that we're all part of him and we're all gods and all of that. That is taking on a real revival. And recently I got into a bit of a debate it's a blog. It's actually Charisma Magazine's blog. And Charisma Magazine's editor, Lee Grady, has been writing some very strong rebukes to the charismatic church that he's a part of, about some of the horrible evils that they have let in. And he was talking about the recent investigation going on by Senator Grassley over the six major ministries, televangelists who are living in high in the hog and all of this. Well, Kenneth Copeland's one of those that is under investigation, and his son wrote on the blog, you know, defending his father Kenneth Copeland for his lavish lifestyle and pretty much defending it. And in there he said that we are all little gods, and that people just, you know, took his father out of context, who said that 20 years ago and got raked over the coals. But today it's now pretty much being accepted that we are the god species, That's another way. So I got into a bit of a debate with his name's John Copeland. I got into it with John Copeland and tried to sort the, you know, show him the scriptures, but I don't think he was listening too well. But this is one of those many ideas that are across the board, that we create our own reality, that we have are all part of God, and all of us together are, you know, almost like the Borg collective or something. We're all God when you put us all together. And so that's just a really ugly trend in the church, you know, and in the world as well, because they're all saying the same thing. Now there's another trend of trying to make everything that has seemed, you know, kind of esoteric and scary, kind of like the belief in ghosts and in angel visitations and all of that, those things across the board, everybody's got an interest in, and everybody's wanting to make contact with angels lately. And, you know, and that's another thing that across the board is happening, and people more and more are getting interested in the supernatural. But, you know, you've got the so-called prophets kind of saying that all of that is a good sign, that the world is interested in, you know, dream interpretation and all of these, you know, esoteric things. They think that that's a good sign, and the church needs to just, you know, give them what their itching ears want. And, you know, I know I was trying to find this one quote I thought I had in front of me of another charismatic claiming that we are God's species, because that's the term that they're using now. Now we're not little gods, we are of his species. And because we were made in his image and likeness, therefore we have his powers. You know, I see a lot of this in scripturally as the undoing of the Tower of Babel. You know, we're undoing the Tower of Babel, and now, you know, as God looked down and says, oh, now anything that they might want to do, you know, it won't be impossible for them, because they, you know, people find this way to, you know, usurp God, basically, and come together and, you know, in fact, they can't even get these atmospheres that some of these people want to create, a different atmosphere whereby they say supernatural can happen in these atmospheres. They can't do it without masses of people together, all combining their energies to stir things like that up.
You're right, and of course they have to have all the people praying the same prayer, and of course then if you can have a little mysticism thrown in on the side. Everybody is fascinated by the supernatural, and I'll have to admit there's something intriguing about it, but people have to understand that there is another dimension out there, and you don't want to have anything to do with it. God tells us in his holy scriptures to avoid the mediums and the fortune tellers and the diviners and the astrologers and these people who are in touch with the supernatural.
And another popular thing now, even in churches, is drum circles. And drum circles is really kind of a voodoo sort of thing. It's interesting that the Kim Clement I mentioned before, in his book, he claims he had his first interest in so-called psychic music he's from South Africa, and through the voodoo music and drums that he used to listen to. And now churches, actual so-called evangelical churches, are having regular weekly drum circles.
I mean, we live in a world gone mad. People don't understand that. I mean, I lived in South Africa as well. But, of course, there is this underlying occultism, and certainly so many of the black people there went to witch doctors before they go to the white doctor. I was the white doctor teaching at a major university, but the people there really did, although nominally Christian, they had this foundation in the occult. And you certainly, the drums were an important part of conjuring up the spirits. And there are all sorts of demonic spirits, and the people lived in constant fear of these demonic spirits. And, you know, people coming from South Africa some of them are wonderful Christians, but some of them may very well be bringing along some of these occultic beliefs into our society, which is the last thing we need. America has been unique. I mean, throughout so much of the rest of the world, the influence of the occult has been very strong, and certainly when I first became aware of these things, I realized we did not see these supernatural manifestations here. But I fear we're going to see them more and more as America ceases to be a Christian country and embraces the occult.
Yes, I agree. It certainly is happening, and it is happening the same across the board, as I said. And another area that is really gaining momentum right now is the belief in universalism, that pretty much there is no hell. And I found that quote I was looking at.
All right, fine.
Oh, you
go right ahead.
Okay. Gloria Copeland often has a lady named Billy Brim on, who she's one of her cohorts that is on her show a lot. Let's see if I can find where it is. And let's see. It says that mankind, this is what Billy Brim says, that mankind should be just as much a holy and desirable dwelling place of God as Jesus himself was. His purpose is to show to the world his sons. And so this whole idea that we can be, not only that we can be gods, but that God wants us to take dominion over the whole world, and this whole dominionism idea, that's another thing that keeps creeping up. And that wasn't exactly the same quote I was looking for, but this whole thing that we're God's species, and so there is not going to be a millennial rule of Christ, but that we are the ones that are going to take over all of the elements of society, from the arts to music and all of these sorts of things.
Well, in other words, we are going to bring the kingdom of God to earth.
Yes.
And that is the dominion theology, and I share your concern about that. Although it is amazing how prevalent that is today.
I know. And the other thing is that is now pretty much accepted in many elements of the church, is that prophecy does not have to be accurate anymore. You can still be a prophet and not have accuracy. And
that used to be that if you were a prophet and you gave the wrong prophecy, they stoned you to death. I guess the prophets didn't like that so much.
Well, most of these prophecies, and I've been holding on to them, and I'm working on an article to see how well they did for their prophecies for 2007, that they gave at the beginning of 2007. And the thing is that these so-called prophets in the prophets, apostolic prophetic movement, they get so nebulous. You can't really pin down anything they say. In other words, they're prophesying what God is going to be doing in the church, and it's going to be invisible or happening in pockets. And it's nothing that you can really nail down. I mean, they're really slippery, put it that way. You can't really nail them down on things. Sometimes they'll get a little bolder and get specifics. In fact, Tim Clement has done that so many times and has come up with egg on his face. But his excuse is, all prophecy since the time of Christ is can be changed, depending on if everybody prays about it, or, it's all conditional. And it's only about 50-50 now. It's no longer 100%.
Well, I guess that keeps them getting stoned quite so often.
Well, it's funny because as I was looking through it, I found one prophecy that was made January 2nd of this year that was supposed to happen by the end of this year that didn't come about. And he was very bold and very specific. And that was on the 700 Club. That was Pat Robertson. I don't know if you recall, but on January 2nd, Pat Robertson said that on the second half of 2007, the first half was going to be just wonderful glory coming down and everything, but the second half, let me see how he put it. He says it's going to happen. He says, and there's a, where can I start? Let's get it. And he says, the other thing I felt, evil people are going to try to do evil things to us. I don't know whether it'll be in the fall or September or later on, but it will be in the second half of 2007. There will come some very serious terrorist attacks. The evil people will come after this country. And there's a possibility that, then he stops himself, not a possibility, a definite certainty that chaos is going to rule, And the Lord said that the politicians will not have any solutions for it. There's just going to be chaos. It's going to happen. I'm not saying necessarily nuclear. The Lord didn't say nuclear, but I do believe it'll be something that will be a mass killing, possibly millions of people and major cities. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I hope people will pray that it won't happen. But nevertheless, that seems to be what is coming. And he says it will be totally chaotic.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, sooner or later there will be something, but it certainly doesn't seem to have happened in 2007, and I don't think it's going to happen before the year's over. So I think that people should really, you know, none of us, I'm certainly not a prophet. I would never even try to make anybody think. I can guess at what's going to happen, but when people say that God told me, I'm always a little skeptical. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I've never been sorry for being skeptical. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Jackie Alnorm. We're talking about this great conference that's going to be on the 18th and 19th of January. Well, Jackie, do you foresee the world leader coming in the not-too-distant future?
Well, I'll tell you, the world is certainly being prepared for him, and it certainly is ripe for him. You know, I find it interesting that he's going to set himself up as the Christ and is going to want to be worshipped, because the Christ really means the anointed one. And that term is being bandied about all over the place. Everybody is more anointed than the next guy. And so this everybody's being accepted to just sort of give that kind of, you know, I don't know what the word is for it. You know how when the Pope walks by, everybody kneels down before him? I don't know if you've ever noticed that. Well, they see him as God's as the representative of Jesus Christ, the vicar of Christ. And I really do believe that, you know, I don't just pick on the Catholic Church, because it's all coming together in all elements, and certainly they're one of the elements, and they're a major element. But everybody has to go back to them. And so I think that before the Antichrist can come on the scene, I believe this one world religion has to pretty much be put together first, and I think that the work of that unholy spirit that we were referring to is that other part of the evil trinity, that the false prophet has to pave the way for the Antichrist in the same way that the John the Baptist paved the way. And these, so many of these false prophets today are calling themselves the ones who are preparing the way. A lot of them are using those terms, and they're the forerunners, and they're even using those words. They're the forerunners. And not for the return of Christ. They just are the forerunners for, you know, for this new, you know, this new dominionism that they are trying to bring into the world.
Well, I think we live in the most exciting, dangerous, frightening times, and I believe that chaos is going to come. I don't know when it's going to come. I don't have a crystal ball, but you can see everything is in place, and if you don't have any faith in the Lord, I mean, how could you possibly look at the things that are going on today and the futility of life if there isn't a God who's put us here, and if the promises of the Bible are not accurate? Well, Jackie, it's been a fascinating hour, and I do hope we can get you on. In fact, I'd like to get you on to some of our other networks, because I do hope that you get an excellent turnout on this talk that you're going to be giving.
Well, I anticipate a good turnout, and I know Moriel is planning on doing one every year if it does seem that people are interested.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, Jackie was saying that she thinks there's going to be a good turnout at this conference. And, of course, remember, if you'd like to get more information, it's www.moriel.org. That's moriel.org. And if you didn't get it, you can always call our 800 number and we'll get it for you. But we do hope that this really does well and that there's a great turnout. And I really think my wife is going to be there as well.
Great.
And, of course, how will she get information on the local accommodations? You're going to give us your email?
Yes, my email is jalnor@yahoo.com.
That's jalnor@yahoo.com.
Right, with no spaces.
God bless. Thanks very much.
Great.
It's been a fascinating hour. I've really enjoyed it.
I have too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent on you to keep on doing what we're doing. And, of course, I would simply point out that we are going to be back on shortwave after the first of next year. We're going to be doing our afternoon program on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, our evening program, but only for an hour, because, quite frankly, we can't afford that, and the prices have skyrocketed, but we'll be on two separate stations on WHRI. So hopefully you'll at least be able to get this the first hour of our evening program. And then, of course, you can listen to us on the Internet, and you can listen live 9 hours a day. You can listen, the archive programs. You can listen to the MP3 programs. You can watch our DVDs and read our newsletters. It's all perfectly free at RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. But if you can help us, we'd sure appreciate hearing from you. And then, of course, we have been talking about some of our writings on this subject. We've been talking about certainly our DVD on The Forbidden Secret is vitally important because it traces this secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years through the Emerald Tablet of Hermes down right to the very day. And it is being, of course, utilized on our television. People are being encouraged to find the secret. We have a four-tape or four-CD set called The Secret Behind the Secret. So the DVD is entitled The Forbidden Secret. Comes with the syllabus if you want to get that. And then, of course, you can get the four-tape or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. If you'd like to hear my interviews with Johanna Michelson, who was a medium, why it's called The Supernatural, and you want to get her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. You want to get the book, The Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, and with that comes the four-tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. You want to get our material on satanic crimes, and there's a four-tape set or four-CD set on satanic crimes. All sorts of information available. You need to get it. You need to study it. You need to check it and find out if it's really true. Is there really a spiritual battle going on? Is there another dimension that some people are tapping into and getting supernatural power? If you have any questions, we have a wonderful video. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. There's the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. The DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The DVD, Riddles in Stone. The DVD, The Atlantis Connection, because so much of this deals with lost Atlantis. And then, of course, we have the DVD, The Emergence by Constance Cumby, and we have a four-tape set of The Wisdom of Constance Cumby. All available. If you'd like more information, our number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like the suggested gift on those items, it's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV, more. And then we do hope that many of you, of course, will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and that you'll pray for America, that you'll pray for revival, that you'll pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until next week at the same time, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.